in the beginnings of the Mocha movement. Last week, we tried to give some biographical background. Today, I'd like to especially focus on his place in history. And I'll be drawing from the first volume of the five-volume work, Tenuas HaMusar, from Harav Dov Katz, that I mentioned last week as being such a excellent overview of the whole history of the Musar movement from before it began until the present time. I mentioned there are, of course, other works, many other works by Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, but one is probably the most thorough, is the one written by Hillel Goldberg, which describes not only the biography of Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, but explains his whole Shita and his Torah, and places him also in the historical perspective. I couldn't get my hands on that particular book the past week, so I wasn't able to use it. But if you can get it, I would really suggest that you read it. It's very, very well written and interesting, and a good book. What I tried to explain last week is some of the background of Tenuas HaMusar. And the fact that the Tenuas HaMusar, as the leaders of the movement believed, was not anything new. It was really a return to the emphasis in the Nevi'im, especially to the emphasis in certain Rishonim upon Chovas Halvavos, duties of the heart, feeling, thinking, besides just doing. And of course, the Tenuas HaMusar draws its ideas from Chazal and from a variety of Svarim, most common ones being the Chovas HaVavos and the Silsi Shorim, Archa Sadikim, and other, Rabbeinu Yonah, Shari Tshuva, and other Sifrei Rishonim. But it has a very special place in history, because of the time in history that it came along. And we will speak a little bit today about the relationship between Tenuas HaMusar and the Haskalah movement. The Haskalah movement, of course, was one of its main enemies. Although the identified enemy of the Tenuas HaMusar was not the Haskalah. The identified enemy was coldness, habit, lack of feeling that the leaders of Tenuas HaMusar found in the yeshivos of that time, in the yeshivos and among the frum world. They felt that people were doing mitzvot anoshim melumada, were doing mitzvot out of habit. What was missing was a real conviction and a commitment and a sense of dedication and emotion. And it was against that that Tenuas HaMusar began its revolution, its movement. And this is where Rabbi Shmuel Salanter did so much of his work. As I mentioned last week, Rabbi Shmuel Salanter was a very complicated person. And one of the things you find as you read various biographies about him is that nobody really understood him well. Because, on the one hand, he was a tremendous gadol b'Torah in the traditional sense. On the other hand, he was involved in activities that seemed to be very, very revolutionary, unusual. He didn't stay in Lithuania. He moved away from Lithuania and did lots of work in Western Europe, in Germany and in France, in university settings. And he had a lot of ideas which were unusual, and I guess there's no better word than revolutionary. I'd like to talk about some of the techniques and teachings of Rabbi Shmuel Salanter and how they were revolutionary. And when I say techniques, I'm using the word very carefully, because these were indeed techniques. And his words, they were tachsisim, taf, chaf, Samach Yud, Samach Yud Mem, strategies, tactics, ways to accomplish some of the things that he was trying to accomplish that couldn't be accomplished in the usual way. Let's try to find something. Give me a second. I always feel guilty when I'm quiet because I'm wasting tape. Right. We mentioned last week that Rabbi Shmuel Salanter wrote very, very little. Well, we have very little of what he actually wrote. No Sforim to speak of, no Sforim that he actually wrote. Sefer Or Yisroel was written by his Talmud, Yitzchak Lazar, Yitzchak Peterburg, who put together a lot of his Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel's thoughts. But Rabbi Shmuel didn't write that much. And among the things he wrote, perhaps the most famous, is an Igeres, a letter that he wrote, which is called Igeres HaMusa. The letter begins with a very famous phrase. The letter begins, Ha'odam Hachoshi b'dimyono, the asur b'muskalo. Man is free in his imagination, but he is controlled in his intelligence. Dimyono malicho shovei b'derech lev ritzono. His imagination misleads him according to what his heart wants. Val yechas me ha'osid havada. His imagination is not afraid of the certain future. He goes on to develop this theme. And this, these two terms, dimyono, this person's dimyon, and the person's seichel, are two very central concepts in Rabbi Yisroel Salanter's thought. Yisroel Salanter was fascinated by the fact that human beings have intelligence. On the one hand, they're rational, thinking people, creatures. And on the other hand, they have dimyon, they have an imagination which can go wild. Rabbi Yisrael believed that for a person to become a mushlam, to become a sholem, and shlemus was one of his words, one of the words that he emphasized, believing that people can perfect themselves, better themselves, and become shlemim. He believed that for a person to do that, he had to do various things. First of all, it was obvious to him that one thing you had to do was learn. And learn meant learning Kol HaTorah Kula, learning Shas U'Poskim. That was like a given. The person had to learn and had to master, had to know. The Limud and Yediyah, that's of course the Aleph. But then he felt that's not enough. And this is where he was a revolutionary, and this is where Tnuas HaMusa went beyond what came before. What came before, of course, people studied Torah. They studied Torah to know Torah. They didn't study Torah necessarily to become different people. And there are many Mamore Chazal that indicate that if you study Torah, you automatically become a different person. Torah has a certain effect on the person. It proves him. It makes him better. But Rabbi Yisroel felt, and maybe he felt this way only for his time in history, but he felt that one had to go beyond just studying and knowing Torah. One had to become a changed person, a different person. And in order to do that, it wasn't enough just to work upon the intellect, upon the seichel, but you had to work upon the dimyon also. A person had to work upon his emotions and his imagination and his feelings. And how do you do that? Well, he had a number of ways to do that. The main way was to study Musar. Study works of Musar, which are designed not so much to teach you what Osur and what Musar, what Chayim and what Potur. The works of Musar are designed to teach you how to be a better person. And he emphasized the importance of including in the curriculum, if you wish, of the yeshivos, the classical works of Musar. which until this point were studied. I mean, people always learn Sifrei Musar, but there was no special time of day in the yeshiva, a special period of time to learn Musar. He felt you had to do that. That was number one. Number two, he felt just to learn it in the intellectual sense, like you read a book or even like you study Gemara, was not enough. He had to learn it with feeling. To learn it with feeling meant a number of things. He had to learn it out loud. He had to learn it with a certain nigun. And in various Musa Yeshiva, special nigunim would be developed. The Musa nigun. Because the nigun, it was felt, the specific nigun, would be able to have an effect upon the person. A certain nigun, certain melody, certain tune, certain type of tune would have an effect upon the person's heart, and change the person. Yeah.
Was it that they developed the nigun because they felt affected the person, or was it that since they developed the nigun, and therefore people knew that nigun was
the Musar? I don't know the history of the specific Musar nigunim, but there are a certain nigun. I mean, not just a chant. I mean, it's mamash a nigun that the people sing. It could be, I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know, the nigun or the effect. But there's no question that early on in the Musar movement, nigun became one way of emotionally stimulating a person. But that's not here. There are other techniques. One technique is what he called shinun. Shinun from Vishinantam, but shinun meaning repeating. Taking a phrase in the Musa Sefer that... that struck you. And I was studying the Sefer and then coming across one phrase or one passage that was really seemed to really get to your guts. And taking that phrase and saying it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until it really starts to sink in. Another technique. It was nigun, shinun. Another technique, of course, was hisbodidus. Going off into isolation. Having a special room or a special shtibel, a special beis hamusar, which was where people would go only to study musar and to make a... That's another technique. Another technique is a group of techniques have to do with cheshbon hanefesh, with people really examining who they are and what they were doing and keeping diaries and examining from time to time what they were doing right and what they were doing wrong. One technique was to have Asiri Yihyeh Kodesh. Every 10th day was a special day when they would, Bali Musa would move away from the rest of society for that day, would be maybe fast, would devote that day to a special cheshbon nefesh, to an extra zahirus. That was another technique. Another technique was to use chaverim in small groups, of like a musar vad, have people examine each other, criticize each other, be mechazek each other. This is another technique. All these techniques were designed to be able to get beyond just brain and getting into the guts, into the heart, to the feelings. And Musa had some very powerful effects. And Yisrael, in one of his writings, goes on to say something that, considering when he wrote this, which is probably in the 1860s, is very striking. He writes that there are two kochos in the person, two forces. There are one set of kochos, which he calls kochos berurim, clear kochos, and the other he calls kochos kehin, kof he yud men, which means weaker kochos, dimmer kochos, not so bright. He used the Yiddish term dunkel, which means dark. So he felt there were two forces inside a human being. There was kochos habrurim, the clear forces of light, and then there was the darker, dimmer forces. And the problem is that if one only uses one's intelligence and one's brains, then you're only in touch with the kochos habrurim. You're only in touch with the clearer kochos. And a person has to be able to somehow gain control and use the power of the darker forces that are inside of him.